translation. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrisimhadeva with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrisimhadeva, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. Next text. O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharat, when Lord Nrisimhadeva gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. Purport. When Hiranyakashipu was in the process of being killed by Lord Nrisimhadeva, the Lord gave the demon a chance to slip from his clutches. This incident was not very much appreciated by the demigods, for they were greatly afraid of Hiranyakashipu. They knew that if somehow or other Hiranyakashipu escaped from Nrisimhadeva's hands and saw that the demigods were looking forward to his death with great pleasure, he would take great revenge upon them. Therefore, they were very much afraid. Om Agyana Timidam Vasya Janjana Shalakara Shakshun Militam Yena Tadzama Sri Guru Ve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Gunitam Sri Advaita Gnada Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. We are hearing Leela Katha, talks of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We cannot deny that we like to hear about people. Indeed, you'll find in the publishing world that anything about people always sells the most, whether it's magazines or books. People are most interested in people. Everyone likes to understand personality. You'll be eager to take personality tests to find out what kind of personality you have. You're always eager to try to understand the personality of those who are near and dear to you. People like to talk about personality. This is natural because the ultimate reality is personal, and we are part of that ultimate personal reality. Last night, in the city, we were discussing what is the ultimate reality. And of course, the ordinary person doesn't have a clue. In fact, the ordinary person couldn't care less. So we had to explain to the people that while you're scratching your heads trying to understand the ultimate reality, let's just talk about the immediate reality, which is not understood. Krishna makes that clear in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Ukramantam stutam bhati bunjanam va gnanvata vamudanam pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The bewildered person can't understand how they have their present body, from where it came and why, what influences the present body is operating under, and what the next body will be. The foolish person is bewildered by all this. Having a body, that is the immediate reality. Now, there's no question of understanding the ultimate reality until we can deal with the immediate reality. But the people have no information about that. Where will they go? If you go to a church, will you find out in the lecture, in the sermon, you are not the body? No. No one is even being informed about the immediate reality. Let's just speak of the ultimate reality. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is very practical. First, understand the immediate reality. How you have received this body. What will your next body be? And then, understand the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality also has a body, but it is not external. It is not material. All the bodies that we have experienced in this world are material and temporary. there's so much trouble. Therefore, when we hear that the Supreme Absolute Truth has a body, has form, we're skeptical. Or even if we don't say it, still it doesn't, the idea doesn't really penetrate to the deepest part of our consciousness. Because automatically or subconsciously we're thinking, I know bodies. Bodies are everywhere. They're all temporary. They're all material. How can it be that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has an eternal form composed of spiritual energy? How can it be that there's no difference between Krishna's inside and Krishna's outside? These things have to be pondered. The more we become interested in Krishna's body, the more successful our life becomes. The more we become absorbed in our own body, the more miserable our life becomes. How many years of experience trying to chew that which has already been chewed do we need before we understand that the more we become absorbed in this body, the more miserable we are? That is the fact of material existence. Of course, for a good part of your life, when you're in your teens, your 20s, your 30s, even up to your 40s, starts to tail off in your 50s, you spend so much time taking care of your body so nicely. You're concerned, how do you look to others? Are you pretty? Are you cute? Are you handsome? Which movie star do you resemble? This takes up so much of your concentration. You're concerned, how do others see my body? You're also concerned how you yourself see your body. Because you have this illusion that the body will bring you happiness. But gradually, as the years go by, you find that the body disappoints you very much. You find that the body no longer, or actually didn't deliver what you wanted. And then you become a little cynical. And then you start to think, well, what else is there? Maybe there's nothing else. So you just have to go on as best you can. Those who understand Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam have access to understanding the transcendental form of Krishna. Krishna's body is ever fresh. It never deteriorates. Therefore, talking about Krishna's body is always ever fresh. Can you just think of talking of someone's body night and day without getting tired of it? Just try it. For a few minutes, it seems very interesting to talk of somebody's body or to talk of your own body. But very quickly, the subject matter becomes stale. But Krishna, you can talk about his body non-stop, year after year, century after century, yuga after yuga, and you'll never become tired of it. In fact, the sweetness will increase. What is the nature of Krishna's body? You sing it every morning. Anganyasa sakalandhya vittivanti govindamari purusham tambaham majami. Krishna's body is such that any one of his senses can do the activity of all the other senses. There's no role limitation about any of Krishna's senses. Krishna's body is compared to compressed clouds of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. When we look at our own bodies, what do we find the components to be? Ordinary chemicals, ordinary ingredients that are found everywhere in material nature. But Krishna's body, that is the subject of our meditation. Krishna appears in different forms, although all the forms are 100% spiritual. He appears in different forms to give you exciting subject matter to hear about, because people like to hear about people. People like to study about personality. So Krishna appears not only in his original form, but also as Lord Nrisimhadeva, as we're hearing now. Lord Nrisimhadeva is the ultimate horror movie. Now you cannot deny that you cannot say, oh, we don't like horror. Why are there so many horror movies? Because there's an appetite for that. People like to be frightened. Yes, you've all gone to horror movies. And maybe some of you even screamed during the movie. Have you ever done that? Yes. You pay to go to a movie and be frightened. And you screamed, right? You paid for that. So why is it you have difficulty understanding there's a Supreme Personality Godhead who can present the ultimate horror movie? That is Lord Yashingadev. Everything is there in the Supreme Absolute Truth. Not only romance, beauty. Of course, even Lord Yashingadev, as the ultimate horror movie, is unlimitedly beautiful. But he's beautiful in a very frightening way. Everything is there in the source of everything. That is the first lesson in Srimad Bhagavatam. Janmadaya Sataha. The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. That means everything comes from God, even horror, but it's there perfectly. So in Krishna, you'll find perfect horror, you'll find perfect romance, you'll find perfect action, perfect family life. All that is there in the source of everything. Generally, when it comes to movies, everyone knows. The men like action movies, the women like romance movies. Krishna has both. He has action, he has romance. He knows how to act in such a way that you will be attracted. And then you'll go back home, back to Godhead. You'll understand this material world is not your home. But until you see Krishna's activities and try to understand them, you won't give up your material activities. By hearing about Krishna, you understand someone is doing things infinitely better than me. Then you become humble. Otherwise, you remain arrogant. I know how to enjoy. I'm in my 20s. Handsome, beautiful, cute. Yeah, some people even say that. Strong. I'm virile. This arrogance that we spoke about yesterday is such a major part of material life. I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get my share. I'm going to enjoy just like everybody else and maybe a little bit better too. This is the basic arrogance that makes us strut around. You can catch yourself doing this. Strutting around in the material world like, I've got some abilities. I've got some good things about me now. May not be the greatest, but I'm pretty good. Look at my latest hairstyle. That applies even to the men these days. Some or other find something to feel good about, that this is mine, my body, and this is in relation to my body. As soon as you hear about Krishna, you become humble. I can never do anything like this. I cannot have romantic activities or action activities to compare to Krishna. And in fact, even though I cannot do what Krishna does, just by hearing about Krishna, I'm completely satisfied. This is amazing. Generally, you think to satisfy yourself, you have to be the enjoyer. You've got to roll up your sleeves and get into it with your senses. Then you find out that all you have to do is hear about Krishna's enjoyment and your satisfaction knows no bounds. That is the nature of bhakti yoga. To realize that your true happiness lies in simply hearing about Krishna's enjoyment. How many of you have ever truly enjoyed just by hearing about someone else enjoying? No. Maybe if it's someone who's close to you, you get a good feeling that, oh, you're happy, you did something that makes you happy, that's very nice. But you're really not satisfied, because what you're really thinking is, what about me? Still, you get a little bit of buzz if someone near and dear to you is happy. Especially if you can feel that you contributed to their happiness, then you feel like you're the doer. That's very important. I have created happiness for someone. I told you about Christmas time, in my house, you know, the prezzies are distributed from Christmas morning. I don't know how they do it in Australia. Is it Christmas morning? Yeah. So, the kids, we go to sleep at night before Christmas. Oh, we couldn't wait. Christmas is coming. There'll be so many presents. Oh, we can't wait to get up in the morning. We go to sleep with great eagerness. Oh, tomorrow, the greatest day of the year. Presents for us. So then morning would come. We would have no problem getting up early. 5 o'clock. We were ready to go. Running down the stairs to the living room, the Christmas tree with all the presents. We're just ready. My brother and I are just ready to tear open the wrapping and get into all the presents. And as soon as we approached the presents, Mother came. No, no, not now. Wait till your father wakes up so he can see the look on your face when you open the present. Ah, I mean, you know, Dad's up there sleeping, let him sleep, we want the presents. You know? No, you don't understand, children. Father has been working so hard to provide the money to buy these presents. All he asks is that he's able to see the look on your face when you open the presents. Oh, come on, Mom. It's Christmas. The presents are for us. No, no, no. Your father really would like this. You should do this for your father. I keep looking at the clock on the wall. When's Dad going to get up? You know, it's 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Come on, Dad, get up. Finally, Father gets up, stumbles down the stairs. All the kids, you know, so happy to see him. Dad! Yes, son. And then Mother, you know, signals that, you know, the event has begun. Okay, children, now you can open the presents. Oh, wait, wait. Does your father have his camera? I'm upstairs, hon. I'm bringing the camera down in a second. Oh, my kids are like, oh, my God, why do you have to go close? He's going to open the presents. Who cares? He doesn't have his camera. All right, another 2 minutes, and he's down the stairs with his camera. Just wait. I've got to be in the right position to catch the look on their faces. So you go through a whole ritual. We tear open the presents, and Father's clicking pictures. Let me see your face, son. Do you like that chemistry set I bought you? Smile for the camera. Do you like that toy truck? Yeah. We're just tearing all the wrapping off it. And meanwhile, Mother and Father, they're watching, beaming. Oh, our children are happy. We got them nice presents. Look at the look on their faces. We worked so hard, and now it's all worthwhile just to see the look on their faces. Of course, you know, we were kids. We were young kids. We didn't care. We just wanted the presents. You know, we were thankful that our parents got us presents, but the main thing was the presents. And we tear open the packages, and Mother would always remind us, did you say thank you? Thank you, Mother. Thank you, Father. Tear open the thank you. So you see, people like to feel that they are making others happy. And also, there's a reverse to that. You like to feel that you can stop someone from suffering. You can stop someone's distress. Doesn't that give you a powerful feeling like you're some kind of doctor of material existence? Oh, you're feeling bad? I can fix that. I can make you feel better. It gives you a sense of self-worth. I can lift up your mood. I can change your good times to bad times, or bad times to good times. It gives you a feeling of power. People like to feel that they have the ability to influence others. Now, when we look at Krishna's pastimes, we see that Krishna is self-satisfied. This is the first lesson we have to understand about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He actually has no need to do anything. It's not that he's forced to please someone. Krishna is self-sufficient. That means Krishna never goes outside of himself to satisfy himself. Everything is his energy. Therefore, he is truly the supreme person. As soon as you have to go outside of yourself, then you're on dangerous ground. As soon as you have to rely on others, then life gets a little complicated. But for Krishna, there's never a complication because everyone is his energy, everything is his energy. Therefore, Krishna is always self-reliant. A truly self-reliant and independent person is the only person you can actually depend on. How can you depend on someone who's dependent? You depend on someone's body for your pleasure, and then that body breaks down and becomes sick. You depend on the weather for your happiness. The weather is changing. Every time you try to depend on someone or something that's not independent, you're disappointed. It's a very severe blow when you depend on someone and only find out that that person is, and you find out that person is simply a dependent living entity, depending on material nature. Now, in Krishna consciousness, the devotees are also dependent, but they are not dependent on material nature. They're dependent on the supreme independence. Therefore, devotees can actually help themselves and others. Otherwise, what kind of shelter can you offer to someone when you are dependent on material nature? What can you actually do for someone? I'll help you. I'll take care of you. Just lean on me. I'll supply everything you need. It's all a game. It's like last night, someone was mentioning unconditional love. It's been the latest buzzword for about 10 years now, unconditional love. No one really knows what it is, but it sounds cool to say. What's your goal in life? Unconditional love. Then you ask the person, oh, can you please explain what that means? Well, I think it means you just love, and you just love, and you just love. That's it. Yeah. Okay, can you tell me the last time you did that? can you tell me the last time you just loved and loved and loved, no matter what happened? Then there's silence. Unconditional love means love without conditions. Now, how can a conditioned soul? Conditioned soul means an entity living in this world of conditions, subject to conditions. How can a conditioned soul love unconditionally? It's impossible. Your whole life is bound up by conditions. Everything you do is subject to conditions. And then you're going to love unconditionally? It's impossible. Unconditional love is for liberated souls, those who are free from depending on material nature. Otherwise, all your talk about unconditional love is just hot air. You're dependent on so many material conditions for your so-called unconditional love. You're dependent on your looks. You're dependent on your income. You're dependent on your ability to entertain. So many people these days are complaining about relationships, that it's so competitive to have a relationship these days. You've got to be a top-notch entertainer in order to maintain your relationship. Otherwise, you're pushed aside, and then you really feel bad. This is what's going on. There's such competition, there's such variety immediately available, that you've got to hold your own in the race, in the pursuit of happiness. You've got to be competitive. That means you practically have to be an entertainer in a relationship. And if the word gets around that you're deficient in the entertainment department, then your career's finished. So there's so much pressure on the men, on the women. First, it used to be just on the women. They had to do anything to please a man. Otherwise, God forbid, they might go for 1 year without a partner. They had to literally just produce. They had to be a walking cinema. But now, the pressure is also on the men. The ladies are putting the pressure on the men. You've got to produce. You've got to entertain. You've got to You just like what I saw in the movies. So at first the men thought, this is great, yeah, sure. But after a while, the men started getting burned out from it too. Wait a minute, enough is enough. I just want to be an ordinary guy. Why do I have to pretend I'm some kind of superstar entertainer? Superstar sensual entertainer. Why can't we just be ordinary people? But no, you can't do that. You've got to hold your own in the race. You got to study books and watch the movies and learn new angles and new procedures. You know, you got to stay abreast of the market, you know. You got to stay up. You got to stay up with everything. Such pressure. And people don't like it, but they know, if I don't keep up with the race, I'll probably just be a lonely person. God forbid to live alone. No. I've got to be with someone. And then you pay the price. Okay, I'll entertain you. You'll entertain me. And what happens when the entertainment fades? Then the so-called unconditional love ends. This is what's really going on these days. Relationships are just mutual entertainment. And there's such pressure on you to produce, like, you know, a top-rated movie. You got to produce that for your partner. Otherwise, if the word gets around amongst your circle that you're just kind of like a, you know, ordinary guy, your reputation is finished. I remember one devotee in New Zealand. He was a nice guy as a teenager. He wasn't really aggressive. He wasn't really endeavoring too much in the pursuit of so-called happiness. But somehow or other, the girl of his dreams became interested in him. And he was like 19 years old. And the way he described it, of course, she was just beautiful. Yeah. Every man will describe his girlfriend in that way. Beautiful. I mean, really, you had to see to believe. She was beautiful. And so they started a relationship, and he was feeling so proud. Wow, a beautiful girl interested in me. I knew it all along that there was something special about me. And he would kind of, when he's walking past the guys, you know, the neighborhood, he'd kind of, you know, yeah, you guys thought I was just quiet, huh? You guys thought I was a bit slow, huh? Look what I got next to me, huh? You ever seen anything like that? But yeah, he was feeling it that way. And then, after about 6 months, you know, his blonde bombshell came to him, and, you know, she just told him, you know, I think we should end this relationship. He was stunned. Why? Why? I thought we were just beginning. I thought, you know, I thought the show had just begun. Why? And she just looked at him, you know, 20-year-old girl, 19-year-old girl, just looked at him and said, because you're too boring. Here's Ram Dass. He was shattered, you know. Can you imagine someone telling you that, you know? You have the partner of your dreams, you know, and you just have a whole future of expectations, you know, how things are going on. And then one day, without warning, she just tells you it's over and looks you in the eye and gives you the reason. You know, because it's important you give a reason these days. You can't just slip out the back door anymore, you know. There has to be dialogue and communication, right? She looked at him and said, because you're too boring. He was devastated. But in that devastation, he read Bhagavad Gita. Now he's been a brahmachari for 10 years. So he could see the pressure that he was putting himself under to be competitive in the job market. That's what it's like. You've got to compete for your job. You've got to compete for your partner. So much pressure is on you. Produce. Act just like they do in the movies. Make sure your lust affairs are exactly like what shows on the cinema screen. You've got to imitate that in order to remain productive, in order to to remain ahead of the race. An intelligent person gets disgusted with all this, but they don't know where to turn. Because, you know, you have to have relationships. You've got to be interested in people. But how do you become interested in people and personality in such a way that you don't suffer so much? Krishna comes to show you his pastimes. How you can be infinitely interested in a person and the taste is ever fresh. No matter what Krishna does, no matter how Krishna appears, here you're reading about a half man, half lion. Yet you can hear this history again and again and again. The taste will simply increase. Now Lord Nityanandadev is having a bit of fun. Haranyakashipu, Maha-asura, the great demon, is attacking him with his club and beating him. Of course, there's no pain for the Supreme Lord. This is all giving pleasure to the Lord, a good fight. So, Lord Nityanandadev captures Haranyakashipu very easily. And then, apparently, Haranyakashipu slips from the hand of the Lord. And all the demigods, the devas, are watching from behind the clouds, from a safe position. They're afraid. Oh, no. Haranyakashipu has gotten away. If he looks up and sees us staring, watching the show, he'll be very angry. He'll obviously realize we're just praying for his death. But this is Lord Nisimhadev's drama. How to add suspense to the pastimes. Sometimes it's said that how can you be attracted to Krishna Leela, Krishna's pastimes, when you know Krishna's always going to win? It's easy. Krishna does things so well that even though you know the outcome, still the taste about hearing these things ever increases. This is the amazing thing about Krishna's pastimes. You know the outcome. You know that Haranyakashipu cannot defeat Lord Nityanandadev, but still the emotional tastes that are generated just fascinate you eternally. Maybe you've had the experience of watching a movie in which you knew the outcome already because you've seen the movie before. That's what I've asked you, I think. Still, you got emotionally absorbed in it, even though you knew the outcome. I think some of you might have even cried seeing the same movie the third time. You got caught up in the scene. Yes? Anyone? Yeah. It's because the emotions just get captured by a good movie or a good book that you've read before. So even though you know Krishna will win, still Krishna does his activities so extraordinarily. Still you're caught up. Uddhava, he talks about this in the third canto of Bhagavatam. He says, when I think of how Krishna was born in the prison cell of Kamsa and then was taken to Vrindavan, when I think about how Krishna apparently left the battlefield out of fear, when I think of all these activities of Krishna, I lament. He's lamenting. Why? Because ordinary people can't understand these activities. He's also lamenting because at that point Krishna had left the vision of ordinary persons. And he's also lamenting for himself. Oh, if I could only love Krishna more. He says, these pastimes bewilder me, even though I know it's just Krishna playing a role. Still, he does it so well, I get bewildered. Oh, look at Krishna. He's in a prison cell as a baby. Oh, look at Krishna as Vasudeva is carrying Krishna across the Yamuna River. Newborn baby. What does Krishna do? He falls from Vasudeva's arms into the swirling, storm-tossed Yamuna River. Now, some of you here are fathers. One father, at least one here. Another father there. Suppose you're carrying in your arms a newborn baby, just a few hours old, and you're crossing a river, and the baby drops out of your hands into the river. Can you imagine that? And you've lost the baby in the swirling waters? This is what Vasudeva went through. Why? Krishna did it. Krishna slipped out of his arms into the water. Why? To increase Vasudeva's love. That is the real purpose of Krishna's activities. Not creation, not destruction, not maintenance, but increasing love. So, Krishna's thinking, why not? This is a wonderful opportunity. There's a huge storm. I'm a newborn baby a few hours old. Vasudeva's carrying me across this storm-tossed river. I'll just fall out of his hands into the water. Just to increase the intensity of his bhava, his emotional absorption. So Vasudeva, just, you can just imagine his mentality, searching through the water for his newborn baby. And then Krishna lets him find him, and he carries Krishna to Gokul, to Vrindavan. This is the real modus operandi of the Supreme Lord. But people, they just think, if there's a God, why does he send earthquakes? Why does he send tsunamis? Why does he create? Why does he destroy? All those things are so external. The real modus operandi of the Supreme Lord is how to increase the love. But we have a hard time hearing that because we think we know so much about love. Yeah, love. Yeah, I know about love. Yeah. That pride is there. You can properly approach bhakti yoga when you understand you know nothing about love and you need to learn. It takes a while to separate understanding love. It takes a while to separate conceptions of lust from conceptions of love. It takes a while. It takes training. It takes purification. We are taking lessons how to be dear to Krishna. How to be Krishna's friend, Krishna's servant, Krishna's lover. We're taking lessons. We're preparing how to do that. It's the most wonderful occupation. And we're inspired because we know Krishna is the most expert in relationships. That's why it's so important to hear about Krishna. Your confidence in Krishna's ability to maintain the relationship will increase just by hearing about him. Everyone wants that confidence in relationship with Krishna. That real confidence comes automatically just by hearing about him. Then your spiritual heart is touched, because naturally in your original constitutional position you are Krishna's servant, you are Krishna's devotee. There are two ways you can relate to Krishna. Sambodh, meeting Krishna, that has its particular flavors of emotions, intensities. But then there's also love of Krishna and separation. Actually, Krishna is more acutely present in separation. When Queen Kunti was offering her prayers, knowing that the Lord was about to leave Hastinapur to go away to Dwarka, it seems that Krishna is going to leave the Pandavas, but that's not possible. He's there in their constant thoughts of them. Similarly, when Krishna leaves Vrindavan to go to Mathura, apparently he's gone, but actually he never leaves because he's captured by the thoughts in separation of his devotees. Therefore, love of Krishna in separation is glorified as the pinnacle of God consciousness, because the feelings of separation produce the presence of the Lord even more than when there is meeting with the Supreme Lord. In other words, you meet the Supreme Lord through the intense feelings of separation. That is the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahenyame. I see the whole world as shunya, empty, because where is Govinda? You might say, what? There's so much hustle and bustle going on in the city, so many economic, political activities. How can you say shunya? How can you say you just see nothing? The Lord Chaitanya says, shunyayatam jagat sarvam. I see the whole world is empty because Govinda virahayame. I'm feeling separation from Krishna, from Govinda. That is the ultimate lesson in bhakti yoga. We begin our lessons in bhakti yoga by learning how to see Krishna as he wants to be seen. That's being sensitive. And then as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we start to understand that separation from Krishna is even a more powerful experience than meeting Krishna. All these experiences can be yours by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, who made Krishna consciousness easy even in the dense darkness of the age of Kali. So it's not hopeless. It's not like, oh, Krishna consciousness sounds so nice, but looks difficult, looks really impossible. It is possible if you take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. As Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, difficult things become easy. And for one who forgets Lord Chaitanya, easy things become difficult. So there's no use in moaning and groaning, oh, I like Krishna consciousness, but oh, it's so difficult. Everyone knows it. You can't really go on with it, you know. I mean, I like it, and I want to believe in God and all that, you know. But it's just that, wow, you know, just look at what's all around us. Just look at all the opportunities for sensuality. How can I just turn my back on all that? Sometimes even people say, it's a common thing, I would turn my back on the world of dark sensuality, but there's someone or someone's who are dear to me, and I don't want to hurt them by turning my back on dark sensuality. I myself am beyond those things, but there's someone who's very dear to me, and if I close the door on such activities, I'll hurt that person. So, in this way we think, life is so complicated. In fact, it is. Kaliyuga is very complicated. But if you take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, you'll always see that the complexities become very simple, very quickly. That is why we're worshipping Sri Sri Gaurangatai. They reduce the complexities of Kaliyuga. They make the impossible possible. Otherwise, I would agree with you. It's not possible to be Krishna conscious in this circumstance, in this present day and age. I would agree with you. You'd be right to say that. Except for Sri Sri Gaurangatai. They make the impossible possible. Therefore, in this age of Kali, we are very careful to always take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Vichananda. Then you can't have any excuse. The most sublime spiritual experiences become yours, even in the most degraded time, by their grace. Any questions?
I think that the separation perhaps the teaching of devotional service, the life of Krishna. So, in Krishna, by being month four, the Prabhupada actually talking about that separation, he actually said that, you know, as devotees, we should also be feeling that separation from Krishna. So, obviously, it's not the kind of experience like, you know, the common devotees are experiencing this, but there must be some kind of real separation that Prabhupada's talking about that we should be feeling.
Don't you feel separation from the deities when you don't see them during the day? When Mangalarti comes, aren't you happy to see them? You've missed them. Your mind immediately becomes pure and clear just by looking at the deities in the morning. Don't you miss chanting your japa? Don't you eagerly look forward to the next japa period? So, that's separation from Krishna. When you haven't read Prabhupada's books in a while, don't you feel acute separation? So. It's not that we have a substandard, deficient devotional service in this material world. That's why I gave the example of the unripe mango and the ripe mango. The mango is a mango, whether ripe or unripe. Devotional service is devotional service, whether in the material world or in the spiritual world. Simply, there's a question of maturity. look around you and you'll see how Krishna is already so merciful to you. It's not that you have to wait until you become an intimate associate of Krishna. Right away, you have impetus to serve Krishna. Right away, you get experiences that show you Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just take note of it. What about prasad, feeling separation from prasad? That's also Krishna. Feeling separation from Krishna's devotees. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.